find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
It's the Kool-Aid Man. Oh, yeah. You listen to Verbal Shenanigans. Don't go away. We're going to be right back. Oh, yeah. I'm working on grape soda, too. Oh, yeah.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right. Back again, Mike. Back again. Feels like it's been a little while. I don't know why. I mean, we recorded a little bit last week, but it's kind of like choppy, and we kind of like we did a little one day, a little the next day.
We went a full life cycle without a recording.
Yeah.
It's some kind of solstice kind of event, you know, like the sun went in a certain rotation without a full recording. The stars are not aligned. We had to hold off, you know. We were afraid like Mother Earth might explode if we recorded in an improper fashion. But we're here. So the world keeps going on.
Yeah, and we had two episodes lined up for last week, and then I lost power for 5 days. And believe it or not, you need to be able to get on the computer, and you need that to also edit podcasts. So.
I was hoping to hear that you were taking all the recording equipment outside in the hurricane, connecting it to a generator to make sure our fans didn't miss a Thursday episode of Verbal Shenanigans, Scott.
Yeah, it was weird though. Like the hurricane was like, I don't know. I guess maybe because we've had Sandy and Irene and a bunch over the years. I was in my garage painting, I was painting a TV stand I was working on, just watching the rain, and it was windy, and I didn't think it was, like, a massive deal.
And then, it was a subtle hurricane that you got?
Yeah.
A calming hurricane?
Dude, it was nothing like Sandy. Sandy was intense, man. I remember watching the trees just, like, waving back and forth, like, oh, God, these are all coming down. And that was when I was out of power for, I think, 17 days, something like that.
Yeah, I had the reverse bad luck of having power the 17 days, but being the only guy at my work to have power, hence having to do everybody's work for that 3-week span.
The moral of this story, folks, is tell your boss you have no power.
When you hate your job, make sure they know, nope, I'm like everybody else.
Mike, it's been 90 degrees and sunny for the last 3 weeks. How do you have no power?
The leaves been changing, and it's just a chemical imbalance on the electrical lines. And then I realized if I don't pay them, I don't get power. Hence, I can sit back and relax for a while. You know, I just got an extension cord so I can have my internet going, but that's all I need.
Mike, it's literally been perfect weather for the whole month. Everyone in the state has power.
Listen, my internet goes out every crisp 62-degree day. I don't know what to tell you. Comcast is just weird like that. I think it has something to do with fiber optics. I'd really like to help out, but in the end, you know, I got to just wear some sweaters and drink pumpkin spice while I wait for my internet to come back.
Yeah, so the storm knocked the power out, and then as I drove around the next day, I was like, okay, yeah, there's a lot of trees down and whatnot, but it's luckily it was like cool the last 3 days as opposed to the last 2 weeks and today, which is like 1,000 degrees outside. So we did luck out with that, but it was almost a blessing in disguise because when I bought this house, it came with a generator, and I have no clue. Like, I know how to start a generator, but it has like the house hookup, and I had no clue what I'm doing down there. There's all these circuits and things like that. So a friend of mine came over and kind of fixed up the generator for me. And we couldn't get it going. It would start for 30 seconds and turn off. Then I'm standing in front of it. He's doing like cleaning out the lines and adjusting things. And all of a sudden you just hear like some giant backfire. And I'm standing and I thought something hit my leg. I thought I blew my balls off. And the generator ran amazingly after that. Never, no problems. So it must have had
it was your testicles that got in the way of the generator. That's
correct.
What happened. Like, the generator's like, listen, I got to move your boys lefty and righty out of the way, and then I'll power your house.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, it was probably like a nest or like just dirt or a clog, because it's been in the shed since I moved here. So God knows how long it was before it was even used. But we got through it. We got power back just yesterday. Yesterday, Sunday morning. So, it's amazing how much you take for granted when you don't have power. It's just you're just miserable. It's just like, you can't do wash. Can't do this. Things start piling up. I'm like, it's down to my last clean pair of underwear. Like, it was almost when I would have to turn them inside out and get a couple more wears. But
my buddy Carl, the Carl system, one pair of underwear can last you 4 days. Good old Carl.
That's gross. So gross.
Yeah, for those who don't know, I used to work with a guy. He went up to one of our offices, and he had to basically stay up there. And he had the loudest conversation with somebody in our department where literally everybody can hear him, where he's like, I've been here for 4 days. I've been wearing the same pair of underwear. And then when somebody asked him, there's a Walmart 10 minutes down the road. Why don't you buy a pair of underwear? He's like, don't worry. I've got them inside out. And he shared it for the entire group. Something that you should never have to share with your coworkers. Yeah. That, I'm a pretty laid back guy. You want to say a dirty joke? You want to say something risque? I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm not going to complain. Tell me the current status of your underwear. I got to talk to some supervisors.
Yeah.
Brutal honesty right there.
Yeah. Underwear is basically 24 hours max, man. Like, if you're going from one morning to the next morning and continuing your day the next day, that is horrifically gross. It's the one. I think a while ago I put a post out on what's acceptable. Like, a shirt basically is 24 hours. Like, you can't, especially as a guy. Like, I sweat. Pant jeans you could wear 5,000 times in a row. Underwear, as soon as that's off your body, it doesn't go back on your body. Socks only in emergency. Like, if you wore them a little bit and you're just like, okay, I got to throw them back on real quick. It's okay, but you're pushing it 24 hours if you got socks on. And if you sleep in socks, I don't know. It's a little weird. I can't do it.
I'm half and half. It depends on the weather with socks.
You just have one sock on? Just your left foot?
I'm very sensitive about the temperature, so it's like every night, it'll always start like in a certain way where it's like, all right, blanket on, socks on. And then it will go blanket on, no socks. And then it will go blanket off, no socks. And then it'll go no blanket, socks. Then it'll go that weird thing where you have like one leg out and one leg under the blanket.
Yeah, don't you also individually have little socks for every other toe? Like, you have like big toe, no sock. Next toe, little sock. Middle toe, no sock. Yeah.
Yeah, I like to go by lefty 2-4 and righty 1-3-5. I mean, I'll live and die with that combination, but
it never caught on. You've been preaching that for years. It just never seemed to caught on. I don't know why.
Yeah, and I think people had complaints because I wore them with flip flops, which I think is different than wearing a big sock with a flip flop. I think individual toe socks can be worn with flip-flops. I don't know. Like, I have different colors on, so it's almost like my nail paintings, I don't get it. Maybe it's the Jersey way. I don't know.
But anyway, if you are just tuning in, if this is your first time listening, that is Mike there. I am Scott, and this is the podcast that we like to refer to as Verbal Shenanigans. I know you hear this over and over again if you're one of our fans, but we're kind of a radio style, I guess you can say, podcast. We talk about life and stuff. Then we always bring on an interesting guest. Today's guest is fantastic, by the way. We'll get to him in just a few minutes. And then we play stupid games and whatnot. We've been doing this podcast for about 6 years. So if you are new, welcome. Welcome. Yeah. I'm one thing I'm glad that when the power went out was that I finished Kingdom, which is a show on Netflix, right before, basically like the day before I finished it and the series. And if we talked about it, I think last week a little bit. It's just this phenomenal show. And I was telling you, Mike, to, you got to check this thing out. You got to check this thing out. And also, a little teaser here, we have next week, Monday, we do have someone pretty important from Kingdom.
It's me.
Yeah, it's Mike. We're interviewing Mike about how he watched Kingdom.
Today's guest, Michael Berlew, viewer of a show. Mike, what are your thoughts on the show? I fell asleep during it, so I guess I'll just have to come next week and give you my opinion on the show. Great work, Mike, as always.
But you watched the first five episodes, right?
First five episodes, yep. It's good drama, good acting. It's got the complete set right now where I did five and I'm sitting back saying, okay, I crave seeing the next episode.
Yeah, I think that's
the perfect TV show.
And so if people are just never heard of it, it's a show based around an MMA gym, essentially a family. The owner is an ex-fighter, and his two sons are fighters, and it's basically them trying to keep the gym afloat. But that's just kind of like the backdrop for it. All the characters have these flaws and drug use and family issues and past issues, like... And it's just the commitment these actors put into the show is phenomenal. Like, Mike, we were just talking a little bit off air. You were saying, like, the character of Jay, who's the one brother, he's the druggie brother, his name is Justin Tucker, and who I really want to get on the show. He will take you on a journey that I think, like, I'm interested to check in, like, with you next week, like, if you watch, like, another five more or whatever it is. And you'll just see that guy starts off like you're like, oh, he's kind of cool, and he just flourishes. Like, but the commitment with these guys' bodies and the shape they're in for this show, if you read online, there's like different articles about like when they're cutting weight for fights in the show, they're actually like going through the actual process too in real life. Like these guys, Nick Jonas, who you wouldn't, when you hear of MMA show with Nick Jonas, you're like, I'm out. But
yeah, you figure that's a VH1 celebrity kind of show. Mm-hmm. When you hear that, where it's like, ah, oh, that last Jonas Brothers album tanked, so and now you either on a food show or you're gonna beat the crap out of Carrot Top.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of? Like, you just realize why these guys are so talented. Like a guy like Nick Jonas, like, yeah, he was in this super successful boy band, then he's super successful on his own, then he's into acting. You know, it reminds, and you hear it, you think, you pigeonhole them into like, oh, they do like girly poppy things, and you're like, the range on these guys, there's a reason they're talented. They probably were scouted when they were like 12 years old, you know, with this kind of talent. Like, it reminds me of like, remember when they announced Heath Ledger was going to be Joker? And everybody was like, what? Like, the guy who, you know, from whatever it is, like, 10 Things I Hate About You, or I think that was the movie. Like, all these kind of, like, semi-girly romance movies. You're like, no way. And you're thinking of Jack Nicholson in your head, and you're thinking of the past Jokers and this character. You're like, it's going to be ruined. Turns out he has that performance that will be forever referenced as one of the greatest performances on screen as far as that genre, you know?
Yeah, he killed it, no pun intended. And then, ironically, then they turn around, Joaquin Phoenix, and again, it's like, oh, what the hell? Mm-hmm. That's gonna be stupid. Killed another one, so it just...
Yeah, it just shows you these guys, like... They probably take a lot of these early things to get into Hollywood, but the range and the ability of some of these guys, like, it's amazing. You know, there's a reason these guys can sing, act, dance, everything. These guys are like you know, it reminds me of like, I don't know, you heard Robert Pattinson's going to be the new Batman. Like, and I have no problem with that, you know, but you think of him from like Twilight and these kind of other movies. There's a very good chance the guy might be phenomenal. You know, like, these guys are trained actors that have been doing it their whole lives. So I'm like, I've learned that over the years to be very open to those kind of castings. Like, there's a reason. They probably came in and crushed the audition, you know?
Well, I think times have changed. I mean, in the past, you become a character, it's over with. I mean, look at Jaleel White. It took him years to get past
that's
her
a good one. Yep.
He had to do, like, tons of, I remember he had a UPN show that tanked early, but, like, he kept going. He did, he was the voice of Sonic the Hedgehog for a while. He's been doing different stuff, so, like, you can actually look at him as an actor. I mean, we had, I forget his name, Cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch.
Right, yeah.
And it was, like, the second he got off the show, everybody's like, no, you're the one that tanked the show. And
that was Robbie Rist, right?
Robbie Rist, yeah, thank you. I was looking for the name, and it took Robbie a while, and he got a bunch of others. He kept on going. He'd get a small part here, small part there, and then it just stuff kind of grew, and it's like, oh, I kind of like what you did there, and it led to that. It's not like the old days. I mean,
look at Hugh Jackman.
I mean, what?
Look at Hugh Jackman. The guy can sing, dance, be in Broadway plays. Then he can go play Wolverine in 10 different movies. You know, like, exactly. The range these guys have is phenomenal. Like, I got zero range in anything. Like, this is all I got. This is me. You know, like, I can't do anything like that. You know?
Scott, we want you to do a sports podcast. No, I can't fathom that. The thing with the ball? No!
Well, ironically, that is our problem. We can't stay on one topic. So that's kind of accurate. Like, I could never be like, you're doing an only, you're only interviewing athletes. I'd be like, oh, all right. You know, like, there's so much more out there. I don't know. But,
yeah.
So Nick Jonas, I know we went a long way out, but Nick Jonas
will have a long career, and the cast from Gilligan's Island died without another project. That's a difference in times.
Well, I don't know. I think that's kind of a good segue into our guest. We can save some stuff for right after our guest, but our guest tonight. So I was hanging around, or I was listening to a podcast, and Bert Kreischer was talking about how he drinks a gallon of Kool-Aid a day. And him and Tom Segura were laughing about it nonstop and whatever. And I don't know, it somehow got on a topic with my friend about Kool-Aid and whatnot. Like, after that, I was like, you drink Kool-Aid? Like, when's the last time you had Kool-Aid? And then I started thinking of the voice of the Kool-Aid man, you know, like, oh, yeah, you know. Sure enough, I reach out to Frank Sims, who was our guest coming up, who was the voice of the Kool-Aid man. Now, I knew nothing about him. Did some research, and it turns out the guy has a world of experience with some different things as far as, like, performing with David Bowie and Madonna. He's a singer. He's in Grand Theft Auto. He's done a million different things. And so we got Frank on the podcast, and the interview is one of my favorites of the year. He's absolutely hysterical. He's got a lot of funny stories. He's really energetic. So I think we both enjoyed this one immensely. So,
yep, it could be an early Burby contender. Ooh. Just throwing it out there. Ooh. It's going to be a stacked pile there come end of the year.
Verbies are going to be outrageous this year. Outrageous. The amount of interviews we've done this year and the amount of good ones we've done this year continues to grow. Got a lot of good feedback on Phil Pritchard, by the way, last week. The keeper.
We might have to do Verbi Olympics, where we have to give out a bronze, a silver, and gold in a category. How stacked we are.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. But, yes, very good interview. Really, really fun. Frank is a sweetheart and a really interesting guy. So, without further ado, here's our interview with Frank Sims. Oh, yeah. Hey, Frank, what's going on?
Let me get my sound on.
No problem.
Okay.
We hear you.
Oh, I hear somebody.
That's me.
That's Scott. This is Mike.
Blue shirt with a yellow clover leaf or something.
Oh, that's me. That's our podcast logo. I'm Scott.
That's Scott.
Yeah.
This is Mike waving at you.
That's Mike, the other guy waving.
Hey, Mike.
Frank, how are you, man?
Where are you guys coming from?
Well, we started in New Jersey. I'm still in New Jersey. Mike's in Georgia. So we are doing this. We've been doing this a couple years now, very far apart, but we've been able to keep it together. So how about you?
Cool. I'm living in right next to the Chrysler Building and the UN Building and smack in the middle of New York City.
Okay. So you're
nice.
Have you?
We got a lightning storm and everything going on now.
Us too. If you hear thunder or you see me get struck by lightning, it's because we're going through the same weather here. So, so I mean, Frank, thank you for giving us a few minutes here. It's pretty cool. I got in touch with you. It's funny because you when I emailed you, you're like, so how'd you hear my work? I'm like, well, one day I was sitting there thinking about, I don't know, the topic of Kool-Aid came up with my friends or something like that. I was like, I wonder who did the voice of that. And then I kind of looked up your work and I'm like, oh, wow, this guy's done a whole bunch of other things before. So I thought you would be perfect for our show. So thank you for giving us the time.
Yeah, it sounded good. Yeah, I do like to know what's going on ahead of time on interviews and stuff. So I'm glad. No, he was very well. You were very responsibly briefed me and what it was all about. It's cool. It's all cool. Yeah.
Thanks, man. So I guess we'll start there. When you were getting into the entertainment industry or acting or voice acting or not, were you trying to be a on stage actor? Were you trying to be in film, or did someone find you because of your voice? Was this a thing that you pursued on purpose, or you just figured it out?
I was born to do this in many ways. I come from an acting, performing family. My father and my uncle, his brother, were both very successful radio, TV announcers and singers too, but okay, they didn't do it for a living.
Right.
But they were very professional, very well-known television, radio and television announcers. My father did the I Love Lucy show.
Oh, wow.
And the Ken Camera show and all that stuff. The Gary Moore, and he did many, many quiz shows and stuff. So he was right, one of the top New York announcers. And his brother, my Uncle Hank, was in L.A., and he was doing all the Quinn Martin productions, the FBI, Barnaby Jones. Yeah. So that was my Uncle Hank. And that was from when I was three and 4 years old. My whole family's born in Tulsa. My dad wanted to leave Tulsa to try what it was like in the big city, so he wanted to go to New York. So I remember when I was 3 and 4, before we left Tulsa, my dad was a country western announcer at a place called Cain's Ballroom, C-A-I-N-S, which is still in operation today. It's not doing a lot of country western now. It's doing a lot of all kinds of music, you know, rock, everything. But it's still around. And I can still remember this incredible feeling that hit my heart of walking in Cain's Ballroom and seeing all the neon lights and the shiny lacquered polyurethane floor. And I'd go up to the bandstand and I'd see the drums and the cymbals and the shiny lacquered guitars and the amplifiers with their pilot lights and the whole thing and the lights. And I would just, oh my God. And the music it just drove me crazy. So it's very simple. My whole life I stayed in music, but not professionally trained.
Right.
I studied guitar from a jazz guitar player when I was in high school, but it was just very peripheral. Kind of just learned the vocabulary of what A through G meant, you know, in sharps and flats.
Right.
Pretty much it. But it was all visceral singing. I'm getting into a band. And so when I was like 11 or 12, a guy and I used to sing at parties and blah, blah. And then it branched into a high school band called the Malibus. And then after the Malibus, I went and got a college education. I got a bachelor's in whatever, and I got a master's in English. Came back, and I still had it in my blood. So I started with the rock bands and the whole thing. So we had a rock band. The rock band was called the Sims Brothers Band.
Okay.
It did very well. I get a couple of records on Elektra Records. And then our keyboard player in the Sims Brothers Band had played in a band with Nile Rodgers when Sheik was known as the Big Apple Band in Manhattan. And so... our keyboard player said, Nile, this is when Sheik was starting to bubble and percolate, said, you got to come see our band. So he came to see our band, and we have three frontmen singers, me and my brother, who you must have read about, not the Sims Brothers, and we do a lot of performing together. and a third guy, and we were the front men on the in the front of the band. So Niall said, "Well, you guys are great. I'd love to use you." So he started using us on a few albums. And then suddenly he met David Bowie with Billy Idol and the club in New York City.
Yeah.
And they started talking. And Niall said, or rather David said to Niall, "I'd love to work with you. Let's put something together." So he said, "Great." So at some point, David said to Niall, "Listen, I'm looking for some background singers for this kind of music." And Niall said, "Boom, I got the guys." So he called me and my brother and the other guy, the three guys of the Sims, but known as the Sims Brothers, and two are Blood Sims Brothers. We sang on Let's Dance, Modern Love, China Girl, the whole album. While we were in the studio with David, he said, "Guys," he came up to me and he said, "Frank, can I have your phone number? I'd like to have your phone number right now." I said, "Yeah, great, great." About a week later, we got a call from his manager saying, "David wants you guys to go on the road."
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes,
cool.
We're going, holy shit. And so it's a world tour, gigantic world tour that he had planned on the basis of Let's Dance. Of course, luckily, Let's Dance was a big, big hit, and the tour was taking off at the same time. Thank God the whole thing bloomed like it did. You know, number one album, number one this, number
one
tour.
So you really caught him, like, right before he exploded. Exactly. Okay.
Wow.
Not when he wasn't well-known, but the peak of his popular known in the whole world. The peak of him, as you know, millions of fans, you know. But when that happened, everybody in the world knew about Let's Dance.
Yeah.
Let's Dance, you know, Everybody knew that. That was a huge thing.
Huh.
And thanks a lot to Niall. Niall did that with many, many, many artists. He would sit them and they would just be hovering in a certain area and he'd work with them and bam, he'd take Duran Duran and produce an album for them and they went shooting up. Just all sorts of people that he produced. Diana Ross was in a very low period, just like she wasn't when anything was popping. And he did the I'm Coming Out, the whole album with and big, big, big hits. So many people. Mick Jagger did a couple of good records with Mick.
Right.
Anyway, so it's in my blood. And I was just, I kept in it. I stayed in it. I was in bands. I pursued it.
Yeah.
But it was really in my blood. And I don't want to get deep into it, but a lot of people who are in this business who go on and on, they're born with a lot. You're born with talent. You can work hard at what you want to work hard at. But when you're born with talent, like, and I see it in New York in the session musicians and the engineers talk about it, they said there's a level of talent in those New York session people, whether it's singers or players or whatever, producers or, you know, that's just, there's nothing above that bar, virtually right. Nothing about that, above that
the
bar.
Elite.
So when you... kind of when you get into this with David Bowie and you go on tour with him, with all your time at home naturally into the business, is it just like another day at work, or you sit back like almost like crap in your pants going, "Oh my God, this is bigger than I can ever imagine," or what's going through your head?
Yeah. When I literally got the phone call, it wasn't a letter, it was a phone call from his manager when I was at my house with my wife, you know, we were just going crazy. How much does he want us to pay him a week to allow for the privilege of being on the road with him?
Yeah.
I'll pay you to do that. You know, so it was like, you're right, every day was like goosebumps. Matter of fact, within the first few minutes, there was a feeling that this rush came over me, said, "I am going to enjoy every single second of this tour. I am not going to waste one minute, not one instant. I'm going to write a diary." I wrote a huge diary, a hundred and hundreds of page diary, which for whatever reason, I'm very busy with a lot of stuff, but I never published it. But I had a thing about every single day and we did and people and we saw and where we played and what we did with David and this guy and Mick Jagger and all these people coming around the whole day. So it was like just explosive every day. It was just orgasmic every day. And even as each day went on, yes, you're going like, "Oh my God, I can't believe we're walking into this hotel with these people." And people, when we checked into the Hotel Carlton, which is in France, very near apparently that Khan, very near Khan. So we were playing in this city called Fréjus, F-R-E-J-U-S, Fréjus. It was like this old 2,500-year-old Colosseum built by the Romans to test their warship, miniature warships. And we played there.
Jeez.
And the sun, the moon is dropping over these 24-year-old stone pillars that line the walls inside, I mean, outside that you're playing inside. And you're seeing this, I mean, but so many cosmic moments. You cannot believe it. So that's because it was David. When that stuff with me, I mean, I just appreciate it. But that's the nature of David. That's what he brought with him. And it was never any place. So we're walking the Hotel Carlton, and we're with David, and we turned out that all these giant, beautiful, traditional French, lovely, probably 200-year-old rooms are connected just by a door, you know. So we open all the doors. We're discovering it one by one by one as we check into our rooms.
Yeah.
And David, too. And we're running through the rooms in a big line, like, oh, here's room, boom, 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 run to him, run through the door, boom, here's his room, boom, run through the door. And David was totally into it. It wasn't as though he's out somewhere else, you know, no, to call me when the, you know, no. He's right. He was always right with it.
That's awesome.
Right with the fun and the action. Let's go out and play some ping pong. No, let's go out to, you know, whatever. Let's go, and he'd come, bring guys from the band. We'd go out, George and I go out to have sushi with them and just a chill. Not many people like that.
No, no.
Especially not at that level.
I mean, speaking of levels, you went on to also work with Madonna, right?
Yeah, yeah. I won't say limited, but I did a very consequential piece of work with her. So in other words, I did a record, probably one of the biggest records she ever had, and it was Material Girl. And that song is probably one of the most famous.
For sure.
Again, they call Madonna the Material Girl.
Yeah.
So it's probably one of the most iconic songs of her career. And I went, live. Thing and I'm material world. So that's my brother and I that are doing that.
Really? All right. That's cool.
Yeah. So again, that's super iconic. And so I didn't tour with her, and we were just there for 2 or 3 days. And she was there, but doing the record and hanging and talking and making up parts and doing what we do with it. You know, we sang every song in that record except for Like a Virgin, where there are no background singers, there's only Madonna. And we sang and everything. And we actually kind of covered her. We would sing the same thing she would, you know. And they call it ghosting.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, that deal. So we'd sing with her. And then that would get mixed in. So, again, she was not a very professional singer. That was only maybe her – that was her first big deal out
there. Yeah, that was early.
She had had the Holiday and that shit with Jelly Bean Benitez before that. But I think the Nile thing obviously was the biggest – so that was just, you know, so we ghosted her to give it that smooth, slick, you know, and then Niall, we were all working on that. So we pretty much are singing with her on many things, you know, many of those things we're singing right up with her. And I mean, it's cool.
That's really, I mean, Bowie and Madonna levels, there's not much higher than that as far as household names. There really isn't.
And we work with Jeff Beck. I also consider Jeff Beck one of the most amazing talents in the world. George Benson. Dionne Warwick. I work so many just kind of different kind of people.
Now, when you're working with all these big names, do you go into any job feeling differently, or have to prepare differently, or is it just Frank Sims? You get him whatever the job is.
It does vary, but often if you're let's say sing with George Benson or Dionne Warwick or somebody or Cyndi Lauper, I sang with Cyndi. There's a group of people who often have sung together before, so we're friends. And if we're not friends, there's a sort of a vocabulary that the singers kind of can dig if you're in that arena and if you've been doing that. And so you communicate with each other, but often it's just people we know each other, especially when you're playing with Niall. And we would know there was a group of singers, maybe 15 singers he'd use for different sounds and grooves and situations, so we know each other. But on the other hand, somebody'd say like, hey, Frank, I want you to really do this, and I want you to sing all three parts for a particular sound. And maybe they get my brother and say, okay, George, and I want you to do these other parts because you have a different sound than Frank, even though you're brothers and you blend very, very well because we've literally been singing together for in this 60-year vicinity, you know, somewhere around 60 years.
That's it?
Yeah. So we've got this thing, as you know, like the Everly Brothers, that we're hypnotized in sync with each other, you know. And yet the individual sounds of our voices, we can bend them to each other, but are quite different. So it makes it very interesting, you know. It just gives another texture. Why is the texture of the single voice, one voice great, but make this and it's got double, you know, the greatness and stuff. Well, sitting here bragging. But yeah. I mean, it's fun to do that. And it's fun to have somebody to blend with like that, and where it's just like, wow, I'm in Zen. I'm in, you know, that's it. Because when you sing with those people, and also, I mean, my brother, and also many other people who we sing with, you know, Venice Thomas, who was Rufus Thomas's daughter, the pedigree of the people you're singing with, you cannot believe it.
Yeah.
Sissy Houston and Whitney Houston, these are people that were in that group. Of course, Whitney went on to have a career. Luther Vandross was in that group.
Wow.
Went on to have a career. But this is the pedigree you're talking about of the people who were singing with each other, who I got to sing on records with, in commercials with, and on movie soundtracks with. And it's just a blessing.
It's amazing.
To see these people walk through the door. And it's often, to answer your question, a very similar group of people, because like, hey, these guys are guaranteed to do the job. We know they do it. They can adapt. They get the things quickly. They don't make mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. Time is money too, right? You know, when that comes to that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we did, by the way, I'll tell you a cute story from when we did Madonna's album. One of the phrases that came out of that, you know, and she was very, she wanted to make everybody stick to the job, you know, what we were doing, to make sure paying attention, to keep working, kind of like, you know, kind of bitchy, I guess you could say, but in a nice way.
Yeah.
And she was just the beginning, but anyway, she would walk around at certain times, you know, and if anyone was kind of sitting around the wedding room, she'd go, okay, time is money and the money is mine.
Your voice acting career, were you doing the singing alongside of that, or did the singing lead to some voice work also?
You know, when I was growing up, my dad, as I told you, when I'm literally 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, I am listening to my dad doing his thing.
Right.
Now, he was in theater and singing. He was in one of those groups that you get the four, like, wah, ba, da, ba, doo, 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 ba. From the 30s and 40s,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
He did that shit. My mother did that. My uncle did that.
You must have had the most beautiful sounding dinner table. Like, all you with these angelic voices, you know, like...
And you know, there's one uncle that has nothing to do with it. And he's like, well, the plywood business is doing great. Thanks, everybody.
No one cares. No one cares. No one cares.
That's what it was about. No one cares.
Yeah. So are you simultaneously doing these two? You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because of that influence, I was always hearing both music, and loving music. Sorry, I started living, well, I, obviously, at the same time I was loving Elvis and Bill Haley and the Comets in the early to mid 50s. So we're talking, I was really listening seriously. I was born 47. So like around 52, 53, 54, 55, really getting a real deep thing going on there. You know, so that's your early Elvis and the Bill Haley and other stuff. And then you're getting into the Beatles a little bit later and the whole thing, the English kind of thing. So I was deep into it. So then when I got into doing commercials, okay, which was a likely offshoot of when you're off the road with the rock stars, there's a huge opportunity to do commercials for Pepsi and Coca-Cola and that stuff. So there was a group of people that did that, okay? And a lot of them had come out of the record business. So then then there was this business, as you asked, just running concurrently in a parallel way of the voiceover community who was on these same commercials. Hmm. So the singers would come in, you know, like Pepsi Cola, Pepsi, you know, and then we'd say, like, hiya, Bob. And Bob would come and say, you know, Pepsi Cola, hits the spot. And so we'd say, hi, Bob. And then so I'm thinking, wait a minute. And a lot of times during those jingles, let's say from something like Alka-Seltzer, the producer would say, hey, Frank, they want to hear how long the copy's going to be. Why don't you just read the copy for them, you know? And I knew from my dad and my uncle just how to do it. I knew how to read. I knew the timing. I knew just the lift, the where to put the emphasis and all that shit. And, you know, it like my brother George, it just comes naturally. But again, because you're hearing it, I'm not saying out of the womb I would have heard it, but hearing it from your family and then from your brothers and mimicking it and doing it in school and blah, 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 it just comes out. Yeah. So I would do these things and, wait, you sound great. Let's put you on the track. So then I get the contract to do the voiceover and the contract to do the singing. And I think, well, this is a good business. So that's kind of how that happened. And then I got an actual agent, which I realized at some point, you've got to get an agent. Because you can't, you know, as a performer, you can't have all your fingers in all these pies. You know, like, Bill wants a job. This guy wants a job. This guy needs a job. So you got to get an agent. So I did. So that was it. So then that just, but yeah, absolutely. I was doing Super Bowl commercials as a voiceover guy, and then going to Madison Square Garden and singing with like Roger Waters on like the same weekend, stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, that's so it. That's great, man.
Yeah, I'd be on dozens. I mean, it's kind of funny, and I'm not bragging, but I was on dozens of Super Bowl commercials. It's just you're in the right place at the right time, and you're in that clique of people. And the producers, you know, Y&R, and they're doing their Dr. Peppy and the Pepper and their Doritos, and it's all the, hey, let's get Frank to come in here. Let's go, blah, 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 get an idea, blah, 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 you know, and then, like, let's put it in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, oh. I did a Gillette one thing sometime, you know, Gillette, you know, and I had to do that whole little one. And they had this beautiful video on. It was like they supposed to spend $10 million. At the time, it was state of the art, you know, the perfect slow-mo, the lighting, the most attractive models you have ever seen in your life, you know. And it was there trying to be cool. So they wanted that kind of vibe. So I happened to do a demo, right, in this little room, and the producer, literally when I finished, he screamed, that's it! So from the first demo, until it went on the Super Bowl, it was that performance.
I love it.
When it was that little room, up until just like fly it right onto the track, we're putting on the Super Bowl. So sometimes they happen that way. There could have been you know what they did? They were planning on calling Bruce Willis, George Clooney, all these guys to do this voiceover. But, you know, it happens all the time. To all us, they call us scale players because I'm not a celebrity. I mean, to people who know what I do, I'm a celebrity, but not to the general public.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Wow. So they say, we need a celebrity.
Out of curiosity, with everything that you've done with voices, are you the type that you got to have like an hour to get ready for stuff? Like, I need a little tea in my throat or something like that? Or are you just literally, you can wake up 4 a.m. and like, boom, here's the voice?
Yeah, I just point my skis downhill and have someone push me. matter of fact, most all the engineers, when they see me coming, as soon as I walk into the booth and close the door, they hit the record button. Because they're running a DAT. Every second I'm in that room, they run the. You know, I've had so many crazy, crazy performances that have gone on the air because they. Taking it from a dad because I've been screaming and doing. If you know the voices, you know the Kool-Aid Man and the Honeycomb Craver guy. These are crazy, crazy people, and the voices, you know, they're like possessed. Yeah. So when I go in, to answer your question, I kind of do get warmed up, but you know how it is. It's not with the tea and shit. It's the minute I walk in the fucking booth.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
I don't want to walk into the room and meet the people in the reception area and say hi. I'm not going to be an asshole there. that's not appropriate for me to perform there. But I'll go in the other room, the control room. Hi, Frank. Here's your script, and we'd like you to do a thing. I say, great. What's your idea? Great. What's your, okay, set up. And the matter of fact, the engineer might come into the room and set up the mic nicely. Here we go. You know, pat it here. Well, okay, thanks, Frank. And then he'll leave and he closes the door. And then I will just start bouncing around like an insane tiger inside the room. Literally, they have films of me just bouncing around, bouncing off walls, bouncing off walls, bouncing off walls, and going, wow, and just getting into crazy or whatever it is. Or like, or else if it's the other thing, if I have to get into another character, I'll do another character. If it's a movie guy, it's a trailer guy, I'm going to get the trailer guy. And so when I'm getting up close to the mic and getting just the right sound, because I know how to work the mic, and I'm getting the right, and I know what I'm doing, and I'm just, and I'm asking the engineer, give me more of this, give me more of that. No, no, take it down. I'm getting closer. No, no, take it down. Okay, you got to give me more if I'm going to go back here. And so I'm instructing, I'm working with the engineer, you know, work with me, babe, come on, work with me. And they're, you know, all the good ones I've seen, there's plenty of them who do a great job at that.
Yeah.
That's the exercise. That's the warm up.
So I guess we got to get to the point where is the reason I reached out to you. How did the Kool-Aid Man thing come about? And did you ever imagine that would, like, I don't know, that's kind of in like the, people still reference that. Like, they still reference it in shows. They still reference it in like conversations. You're talking to your buddies, you go, oh yeah. Like, you know, they still reference it in normal day life. And what are we talking, 30 years ago? Like, how did that come about? And did you ever think that would be this kind of like, I guess it's kind of timeless is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, it is an iconic piece of American advertising. And I'll tell you, it's very simple. When I had an agent, and the agent said, hey, they want to audition somebody for the Kool-Aid Man voice. Somebody said, well, they already got a Kool-Aid Man voice. But they sent the auditioners, us guys, to the office, and the instructions were, okay, here's the deal. Kraft wants now the Kool-Aid guy, who now just goes, oh, yeah. Which is pretty much all he did was, oh yeah. If you listen back to the old ones, that's what he did.
Yeah.
So they said, Kraft now wants for the Kool-Aid Man to speak copy. He wants him to talk about the new flavors and this. We're doing, hey kids, we're going here, we're going there. We're, you know, okay, yeah, hey, everybody in the boat, we're gonna do this. I'm making orange Kool-Aid. This time it's lemon. I'm working out. You know, they want him to say that. So the Kool-Aid Man was a copywriter within Gray Advertising, where the campaign existed. He was a copywriter.
Huh.
And while they're sitting around in a meeting, somebody said, and he was part of the meeting, and somebody said, you know, we talk about the little guy or the pitcher guy, whatever, I don't know what started. What we need, should we have a voice? Should we have him do something? Should we have him wave his arm? And somebody at some point said, or the guy said, let's have him say, oh yeah. You know, and so this one guy, and I know his name, I'll flash on it, said, oh yeah. And somebody said, like, yeah, you know, like one of those things. He'd go, oh yeah, oh yeah. But again, if you reflect upon it, no big start. We'll get back to that. So now they say, okay, guys, need an auditioner. We want you to start saying stuff like, you know, Kool-Aid's the best drink for kids and blah, blah, blah. And now try a new great Kool-Aid, blah, 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 blah. So I auditioned. Bam, they picked you. I said, fantastic. But at that point, it was just a really nice gig, you know? So I did a bunch of sessions, but, you know, just a session, a bunch of sessions. And as time went on and on and on, they got, the illustrations got more sophisticated. They'd take them to, very expensive animation houses to do the background, you know, and combination of live action and cartoon stuff. So, and then it kind of boiled down that they had their image, they had their Kool-Aid Man sound, and they were really happy with it. And then suddenly Gray Advertising lost the account to Ogilvy and Mather. And when that happens, that's like really scary, because that means they completely clear the deck, and they get all new people. They got new talent, new producers, new everybody. So they re-auditioned people. So all these guys came back in to do, like, again, copy the same stuff. And I was one of them, and they gave me the shot to do it. I wanted again. So I knew that what I had that quality for that voice. So I continued to do it. And at the point, it got to a really great point when I'd only go in for one session a year, and I'd work for 3 hours, and they'd have me do the "Oh Yeah," even though they had had the first "Oh Yeah" that they really had early on. Right. They never lost that. They kept that in the box. So they never lost that. And just kept rebroadcasting that. Because, you know, demo love. They call it demo love. And so they kept rebroadcasting "That's Our Baby." That, you know, just like Tony the Tiger. You would never change Tony's unless now I'm going to die and you get a new guy. And he's not doing as low as the dude. But whatever. But, I mean, I auditioned for all these characters. Tony the Tiger and this guy. And they're blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's all in that loop. Anyway, the back end of your question, I had no idea how he was worshipped. And I would have people come and say, I talked to a black engineer, and he took me aside. He said, "You know, you are the hero of the African-American community." Meaning the Kool-Aid Man, something about him and his essence, he's a hero to the people in the black community. Again, this was like 15 years ago. Things have got a lot deeper now, you know. But that's what he said. And I had so many people. And when people would talk and they'd say, "Oh, could you do the voice?" Not many people. But if I would do it, they would somehow, you could see that something had changed in their brain. There was like a disconnect. Yeah. Like, I can't believe that's coming out of a human's voice. And when I do it, I have an edgy sound. And when I'm live with people, it can be very, very loud. It's a dynamic sound.
Yeah.
You know, because I have a big, big chest. So when it comes out, it's almost frightening, you know. But I had no idea that it would be so iconic. And you're right, whether it's Family Guy or, oh my God. I'll tell you another
the best. Cute
story. Yeah, I'll tell you another cute story that relates to that. As you probably know from my look at my stuff, I work at Saturday Night Live a lot.
Yep.
So generally, whenever there's singing to be done with the host or with the commercial, we do it sometimes live, mostly live, sometimes pre-records, blah, 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 blah. So we were there one time doing a live thing, right? And what happens is you show up at 11:30, you do a rehearsal, you come back at about 2:30, you hang out, you have dinner, blah, blah, you do the show, blah, blah. It's all day thing. So I'm walking around and somebody says, "Hey, Frank. I said, "Well," they said, "they're looking for you in the studio." I said, "What do you mean? Why? What's going on?" He said, they're doing a Kool-Aid spoof in there, Kool-Aid Man spoof, and I told them that you were in the studio. I said, because they got just one of the writers is going to do the voice of Kool-Aid Man. And the guy said, no, the Kool-Aid Man is here.
He's right there.
Yes. Yeah. So they walked in, there's about 10 people, and they're just going, oh my God, it's him. And I went to the booth, you know, and going to the booth, you know, I went back and started doing, you know, "Hey, how you doing, guys? Hey, boy, oh yeah." And I started doing shit, and they're just going, oh boy. So they just gave me lines, and that was a spoof skit on Saturday Night Live. Actually, I'm trying to think who did it. Funny white guy with the curly blonde hair was in the skit, and then the new black guy was in the skit, and then the Kool-Aid Man can burst into the wall and it was like, but they ran. Yeah, so
that's awesome, man.
Examples, these guys, before they knew I was there, they're just thinking, "Hey, let's do this skit where this happens and that happens and this," because again, like you say, it was in their mind. It's like, you
know, it's there. Man's,
it was a funny thing to talk about.
It's in the psyche, definitely America, if not more. But it's like common speak. You know what I mean? Like, it's common. It comes up in conversation. You know, someone says, "Oh yeah," or someone's wearing red, or so you're like, "Oh, what are you, the Kool Aid Man?" You know,
hey, Kool-Aid.
It's true.
Somebody asked me. They said, "Did they call you to do the thing on for Seth on the
Family Guy?"
Yeah.
I said, "Nah."
That's
what he said. Come on, they should have had you do it.
They should have.
Well, speaking of current events, what are you currently working on? Are you doing more music, more voiceovers? What's in the horizon?
Right now, well, I know it's kind of funny. COVID has changed a lot for me. I've been doing voiceovers. pretty much. These days, an artist who's done what I've done, I guess you would have to say, musically, you'd have to create content pretty much.
Yeah.
Session work is not something that right now is just flying in the air and going, hey, we need you to sing. We need, why don't you come on sing here? Why? And not necessarily just COVID. Even before COVID, people were saying, okay, we're in an age where we've done this, done that. A lot of people are kind of out of the business. They're kind of, I don't want to say retired, but they kind of, they lose a lot of that vim and vigor you had when you were in your 20s and 30s and 40s and putting out content. I got to write this. We're going to do an album. But now, some of my younger friends do that. But what I'm noticing is that people my age, and that's my feeling, is like I've lost the impetus to kind of talk about anything. I mean, I see a lot of things, I have a lot of ideas, but I don't even feel comfortable, I think, with the way that music is put out and delivered and put on Spotify and kind of just put into a gigantic, massive safe of material and content that can be, you know, delineated and labeled and stuff. And it's just, you know, I don't know, because that's what I see. In other words, if I were to sit here after I hang up with you and say, you know what, I'm going to get out the guitar and I'm just going to write a song in 20 minutes, let's say, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then I'm going to call my buddies. Then I'm going to record it remotely. Then we're going to do this. And then I think I'll put it on Spotify.
Yeah.
You know, to me, who has done what I've done, and again, I'm not bragging, but when you've done what I've done, to do that, it's like, really?
Yeah.
why bother? It's like, and again, I hate to be maudlin, but many of my, again, David is gone. Many people, some of my best friends sang with Aretha for the last 15 years. And I'm not saying it's not possible, but I see this of like their generations, their scares. And then of those people, I can't imagine them saying, you know what, let's get together and write a track and then get a bunch of people to come sing. You know, it's kind of, I got to say, it's kind of like that glacier is like moving away. And the way you make music, the way you market the music, who's listening, how much they're listening, if you get 30 seconds and stuff. And I've also seen this because I did a lot of work on the union as a member of the Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, board, national board. And we go to meetings and you start to look at the way that people digest and absorb media. And I'd see facts and figures. I'm thinking, wow, everything is moving so fast. And the taste. And who's listening, you know, and what they're doing, it's like, you know, I'm not connecting. I'm not rocking this. I'm not connecting. So as far as music, if there would be some nice inspired project or something, I could say, might be a nice idea, but that would be rare.
Yeah.
Voice now, there seem to be more opportunity for voice. I like to do it in comedy, you know, and whatever else it would take, and acting. I've done like 3 or 4 films.
Yeah. Hey, again, Frank.
That's like the music. Those don't come up a lot.
Frank, can I? Yeah, so just for the audience and just so I know, for editing purposes, we just lost our Zoom call, so we're back here with Frank. Frank, one thing we did not really get into was you went from voice acting in a lot of commercials. You also kind of entered into that very, I guess it's, I don't know if it's lucrative, but there's a lot of opportunities now for amazing voice work on video games, and you were in Red Dead Redemption and a bunch of other really big games. What was that like entering that world for the first time?
It was different, and I got that work through my regular voiceover agent, my agent's Atlas Talent in New York here in L.A. So they had people calling them saying, we're doing a video game, please send us X amount of guys. Or they would sometimes ask for us by name. So we show up at a studio, sometimes an audition, but often just show right up. And in the later years, they've been fitting us with helmets, open helmets with lights that maybe 6 or 8 crazoid lights shine right into your eyes.
Okay.
And but with cameras also. So lights and cameras, you know, and these little things that are sticking in your face so you can see all this shit. And and some guy comes in and he fastens, it's like almost like an electric chair. So the dude comes in.
Oh my God.
And it's too tight, man. The thing is too tight. They got to figure out a way to soften that band, you know? And so the band goes around, you know, your head, and they tighten it up and get these things. And the thing with me, as I told you earlier, I kind of am very physical performer.
We can tell.
Oh. So the guys would say, and I'm looking at a, oh, that's another thing. I'm looking at the screen. So it'd be like this. So like if my mic's, no mic is in front of me because all the shit's whatever coming mics and
yeah,
cameras. So I'm looking, and here's the screen. And they've got all these just rough, sort of lines and basic figures and positions and very sketchy outlines and maybe a mountain. So it's not finished, you know, so you really can't tell anybody. But they tell you that there's the line, and then they'll feed you a line, you know, and you do the line. And sometimes you have to quicken it up or slow it down to match with the way the figure. Now, in Red Dead Redemption, I did a figure called Magnifico. And it's a little magician. A little short, tiny, magical gnome.
Okay.
A bad disposition, cranky disposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Red Dead Redemption set kind of the Old West. I don't know. I've seen little, you know, kind of snippets of it. I don't play video games, you know. And so, but the cool thing now is you go on the internet and they have featured little sections and scenes. So I can say, Magnifico. Red Dead Redemption, I can see what I did without having to play the damn game.
Yeah. You see your own highlight reel.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. But when I'm doing the Magnifico voice, you know, like, and there's a lot of action. He's jumping through the woods, and the woman's picking him up and putting him on a stagecoach because he kind of ran away from the gang, you know, and so they had to go chase him and pick him up and put him back in the seat and go, yo, you know, and he's making voices and faces and shit. So they're all, I'm trying to kind of get the vibe of this guy from a rough line drawing and a basic scene sketch. So that's what you're doing it to. I'm sure there were other people, not other people, there have been other instances and situations where possibly the drawings are more finite. But I'm not sure. But it was fun. But it's cool. And then I did a whole bunch of Grand Theft Autos. And
yeah.
That was an interesting part. I did about five of them. And the first one, I was Russian and Italian mobsters. So the Russians were shouting and screaming. And, you know, I had to make a Russian accent. And then the Italians, I had to make an Italian accent. And then the next one, I became... a character, when one of the characters would walk into a room, and in the living room would be a TV in the corner, and on TV would be a show playing. Well, I guess part of the game is you can go look at what's on that show and right. then focus yeah, on yeah, that yeah. show.
Okay, yep.
Right? Okay, so I'm one of these crazy characters, the lead character in this show that's on the TV when Grand Theft Auto dude is walking through town. And so he's like also an animated guy, and he's up like a sort of a hero with the cape, you know, like but he's a kind of fat guy, you know, and he's got a big ego and the whole thing, you know, and he's got a whole voice. And so and they call him impotent. So something like the impotent something. The impotent liberal. The impotent liberal. Yeah, that's what he is. So that's in a bunch of them. So, but I'm just saying, it's so funny how, you know, you, all the different characters.
I think it's amazing. I really do.
Now, we've actually had a voice actor on here before, Michael Bell, and we kind of got a laugh of a story. Like, he gets very upset about celebrities who get voice roles because he feels they don't act. And he told us a story of how he did a project with LeBron James, and he was, like, screaming at him make him cry.
That was one of my favorite stories.
So I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on, like, because lately it's always been, like, any new Disney film or Pixar, it's always, like, 10 names of, like, some celebrity taking over a role. I'm
Shaquille O'Neal as Aladdin.
It's funny. I got to tell you another thing that my father and probably my uncle, but I didn't hear it directly from my uncle. My father in the 1950s and 60s said that very same thing, because he'll be sitting at home and he would hear an actor from, let's say, maybe it was like Charlton Heston or somebody, right?
Yeah.
Doing a commercial or something like that. And he would say, that damn goddamn, he shouldn't be doing my work. And he's an actor. He didn't necessarily, what you referred to as Mr. Bell, he didn't say it because of the talent. He said it because they've got the money and they've already got a job. So get out of my job. That was his thing, which I'm sure related to Mr. Bell. I got to tell you a funny story, and I don't want you to share it, but when we were on a negotiating committee for video games, this was a long time ago, 15, maybe 20 years ago, and I was on the committee because I don't love him. And he's from LA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe so.
So he was on the committee, and we were doing a video conference. You know, it's pre-Zoom, but it was like you get a big screen in the boardroom in New York and a big screen in the boardroom in LA. And he was very adamant about the contract, about, don't give an inch. Don't give an inch. I remember that he was very one of the real hardliners, the Paul Wolfowitz of the contract negotiations, they just move ahead. No. And I didn't have a great argument with him, but I remember saying something about it was time for compromise.
Yeah.
But that's a very small little deal. But again, that I do remember his name. Mike Bell, wasn't it?
Yeah, Michael. He did G.I. Joe, and he's done quite a few.
DuckTales, I think. Oh, yeah. Transformers.
For a long time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's quite a celebrity, a voiceover celebrity. Yeah. And it's kind of funny. I virtually know no voiceover people in L.A. It's so pocketed, Because the New York guys have a way, and the L.A. guys have a way, and TV is a lot of TV in L.A., and New York's a lot of news and stuff.
Yeah. Well, Frank, I want to thank you for giving us the time here. I could listen to you talk all day. You got stories upon stories, and just hearing your energy still, and even watching you. I don't even know if you realize it. As you're talking, you start getting into character a little bit. So I can imagine what you're like in the booth. So it's pretty awesome to hear. And I'm really glad this turned out the way it did. And I want to thank you a lot for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm so glad you called me, Scott. And thanks so much, Mike, and for the whole deal. I think you got a great thing going. I love looking at your list. There were some fascinating people that I knew a lot of the names. It was really great to see the name. Some were just oddballs.
Yeah, we do that. Yep.
Oh, the Potpourri podcast.
Oh, love to hear from oddballs. That's the greatest.
Yeah, we love them too. Like if we can't get someone with a name, we go for someone with a really unique profession or something like that and pick their brains. And sometimes those turn out better. It's amazing.
Yeah, so. you gotta get nutty guys. I think it's just so great to get nutty people.
I agree, man.
We got a real story.
We literally went like 1 week, you played in the World Series, so the next week, you had the world record for running backwards.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a true story. But Frank, thanks so much, man. And stay safe out there. And I hope to hear from you soon. All right, Mike, the one and only Frank Sims.
That was a good interview. I was thinking back to your question. I think the last time I had Kool-Aid was probably the fifth grade.
Really? Why don't we maybe next week or our next episode, why don't we each pour ourselves a nice glass of Kool-Aid and drink it during a podcast and see if it, like, I don't know, invokes any kind of memories. If Kool-Aid is still good. Like, I don't even know if I would enjoy it anymore.
It's hard to say. I mean, in hindsight, I doubt they really dabbled with the ingredients or anything. I gotta think that same packet from when I was 10 years old is the same as what I would get today.
Yeah, I think so.
So
yeah, so why don't we have a nice glass of Kool-Aid on the podcast next week?
I feel every week should be a different, like, old school drink. Like, that's... after that we'll have a Tom Collins. After that, we'll have a Crystal Light.
Or we could
just keep on throwing things out.
We could do like old school snacks too. Like, go pick up Dunkaroos are back and have them. Ooh. And kind of see if it sparks any. See if they hold up. Like, does it hold up? Would be the, you know, is it gross? Like, a lot of things you taste now that were popular when you're young or things young kids had, it's just too sweet, you know? It's like, oh, God. But yeah, we could do a little does it hold up segment. Or have it throughout the cast and just kind of comment on different things. But Mike, can you talk to me? You're eating Dunkaroos nonstop. It's supposed to be one package.
Stop, Scott. It got 5 tons of sugar in one bite, and now it won't let me stop.
I can't stop buying them. But yeah, Frank Sims is a great man. What a great interview, Mike. What do you got going on in life here?
Scott, I kind of feel a little bit, I kind of feel manly and I feel kind of feel less of a man.
Manly and less of the man at the same time.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So we've had a few, I think they're paper wasps on our deck.
Okay.
And they've been there for a while. It was for the longest time. I was kind of like, I'm going to let them be. They're going to let me be kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I finally ended up, I got rid of one nest. It was in a weird spot where I could actually open my side bedroom door and just like creep out and spray it, but still have enough time to run back in kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, I had a full strategy, but in any case, like, a few of the strays that still survived, we had a bad week. Like, I think about a week and a half ago, Callie loves my dog. Anytime she sees them, she'll try to bite them. She will try
to bite wasps.
If she sees anything flying by, she will try to eat them. And usually they let them go. One day, it didn't happen. So we got the whole big old yelp from my dog, and I felt bad for her and whatever. Fast forward to, I think it was this past weekend, I was mowing the lawn in the back. I've been using the push mower because my riding one is gone.
Oh yeah, the push mower, baby.
Yeah, so I'm on the side of my house and all of a sudden I'm like, why is my leg burning?
It's funny, and when you say push mower, I think of the one with that's not even motorized, the one with just the blades that spin.
Just like 800 blades in a circle by where you gotta push it 10 times to cut like an inch of grass.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah.
But so I got stung by one, and I wasn't in like an agony, it burned a lot, but I always got this thing with bees. It just gets in my mind. So like I just panic. I let the mower go and it went inside, and I'm literally got my leg up on the kitchen sink. And I'm just like pouring cold water, having the faucet pour over it, and with still like an ice pack over it. And as I'm doing it, I realize I look down in the wasp or the bee that is like on my shirt. So I did the girly kind of moment.
Yeah.
And like I literally got by and it was like buzzing around in the kitchen. And I had to do a thing where I had the wife open the door. And I had to kind of swat the bee to get it into the direction of going outside before we can shut it off.
Yeah, yeah.
So my wife got a good chuckle out of that. Then fast forward to this Saturday, she and you probably seen it. She does a ton of photos for her running.
Yeah.
She does it for Instagram and Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So she does a thing where every time it's like, I got to do a jumping picture, and then she'll put her, she'll kind of Photoshop her into whatever is the topic of the day.
Yeah. I call them Izzy's acid trips. Like, yeah. Like running with unicorns
I mean, she puts thought into it. God bless her. And she does it every day. Something like, you figure as a guy who's been doing a podcast for 6 years would want to be that creative. No, don't want to do it. But she did her jump, and it aggravated one of them wasps. You know?
Okay.
So she got like stung. She says like two on the back and one on the side.
Damn.
So me and her had kind of like a debate on when it happened. Because after she jumped and I see the wasp is on her, she's like, ah, it's stinging me, it's stinging me. And I'm yelling at her, go inside or come with me down, whatever. I'm like, literally tell her, just run. These things aren't that fast. You can get away from them. She's in the argument of, I panicked on that one. Where she was like, you were screaming like a little girl for me to move, and I was just standing there taking the wasp stings with no issue. So she kind of questioned my manhood there for a little bit.
Right. I don't know, man. Wasps and bees, I think they'll make anybody kind of like freak out a little bit, especially when it's happening. You know, hindsight is 20/20, but when it's happening, no one wants to get stung. When I was a kid, I felt like bees just were like, always after me. Like, I remember playing soccer and one went up my shorts and stung me like way high in upper thigh in the middle of a game. I remember driving in my dad's car, van, back in the day, and I went to rub my like chin on my shoulder, kind of like an itch, and some bee like stung me right in the like the jugular, and screaming.
So, like, the bee was just hanging out on your shoulder?
Yes, yes. And it must, like, have been out of the blue, right there.
You got an itchy beard, and he's like, yo, what the hell?
I wonder if I'm assuming the itch might have been me feeling the bee moving, and then I just squashed it. I stepped on bees. Like, I felt like every year I was stung two or three times. So I kind of feel for it. Now, I haven't been stung in quite a while. But I kind of, you know, like, I don't blame you, Mike. I don't blame you on this one. I think anybody is allowed to kind of freak out when they're getting stung.
Yeah, I've had too many stories. Like, I remember as a kid, my ball went under the porch, so I went to go grab it, and we had like this old lawn chair that was like sitting there for like years, and was never used, and it was like covered with water. I'm like, well, I got to get over this chair, so I'm going to just rip the mattress off and get to the to the ball. So as I ripped it off, at first I'm like, wow, there's a lot of like cloth in the air, like tons of cloth in the air. To my chagrin, it's like, oh, that's a bee's hive, and I had to literally run for my life. And one like got me, and then like as I went inside, one literally was flying directly to my face. It was like somebody shot a gun and a bee was coming to my face.
That's right.
It literally was streamlining in between my two eyes, which freaked the living hell out of me.
It was talking smack. It was just like, yo, I'm going to get up in your face, man. Like,
yeah,
you can't handle us.
Yeah, the Honey Cheerios bee was not happy that I had Chex Mix earlier that morning.
Who do you think was the best like mascot from their era for food? We have the Kool-Aid Man, obviously, from today, but you have the Honey Nut Cheerio guy, you got Tony the Tiger, you got the Lucky Charms leprechaun. Like, who had the most lasting,
For me?
Yeah.
It's probably not the number one answer for other people, but I always felt bad for the Trix Rabbit.
You felt bad for him. Why?
I felt bad for him. It's like every commercial, those smart-ass kids are just like, no, you don't get cereal. You're a rabbit. You don't get any of this. Shut up. I don't care if all your life you always wanted this. You ain't getting a bowl. Get out of here. Like, they would literally eat it in front of him. Like, that's how cold they were. They didn't just be like, no, you can't have any. You'll die. It's like, no, you can't have it. And like, damn, this is good. It's made for kids.
So you most kids are just watching this product, you know, thinking about how good that cereal tastes. You were busy empathizing with the poor rabbit.
Yeah.
They couldn't, heart of gold. Like,
they could have ended like the series of commercials would just be like, here you go, enjoy it.
So you just want like a nice family sit down meal with the Trix rabbit. Like they just all get along at the end.
Well, I mean, I just feel like there should have been commercial. I mean, the Cocoa Puffs guy, he always got Cocoa Puffs in the end.
Yeah, he was more rabbit. Of like a drug addict. Like he was just, he would go cuckoo, you know, like he just like, was fiending.
He was like a Florida man on bat salt.
Yeah.
Kind of deal.
Yeah.
But just give the, I mean, that's what I always felt like all these other ones, Tony the Tiger, he had cereal, the Leprechaun ate his cereal. All these guys had their cereal. Kool-Aid Man had Kool-Aid in his system. Give the freaking rabbit some tricks.
Well, I'm sorry, pal. I'm actually curious who, like, which one of those, are, if they're all, like, Toucan Sam and all, if they're all still, because, like, you know, we would see that advertising when we watched kids programming, you know, cartoons, and when, like, now I don't ever see it because I'm not watching, like, kids stuff. Like, I wonder if all of them are still around or not.
I know they redesigned Toucan Sam. I saw a commercial. They kind of do it like Japanese animations, anime. They kind of redesigned him like that.
He's bird flu Sam.
Tony the Tiger is still out there. Whoever does his voice, I just shake my head. It's, I mean, I understand when an actor dies, you get replaced, but at the same time, it's like, okay, you're a little too off, my friend. It's kind of like Kermit the Frog doesn't sound like anywhere close to what Jim Henson was. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, okay, I can see you could do an imitation, but I can tell it's an imitation.
Yeah, I don't know who's still around. I'd be curious, to, like, is the Leprechaun still around, or is he, like, not acceptable? Is that, like,
He's still in boxes. I'm not sure if I've seen a commercial lately.
Yeah, I want to know. I feel like when we were kids, they were pushing cereal like crazy. Like, I don't know if it's still like that. Like, Captain Crunch, is he still around? Is he still the captain, or is he retired?
I haven't seen one of his commercials.
The Cheerios bee, like the honey bee.
I've seen him.
Yeah. Maybe Gritty could have his own cereal, Mike.
Ooh.
Yeah. The other day, I go on NJ.com, like, to, you know, see what's going on with the pandemic and stuff like that for New Jersey. And the feature story is how Gritty rose to fame. I'm like, why is this on NJ.com? And two, like, out of all the news stories, this is front and center.
Well, I mean, New Jersey doesn't know what hockey is right now. So I guess true. That's a reminder.
Your Flyers look good, man.
Number one seed.
Phil told us last week. He said the Flyers were moving.
They need something, man, in Philly. I mean, the Sixers, they keep on imploding. The Phillies, God knows, they got no bullpen. This could be something.
Yeah.
Could be.
And especially hockey, where you don't have to be the number one, two, three, four seed. Like, you don't. It's just catching momentum going into the postseason. How many teams have want it that way, like a team that just looks invincible in the playoffs? It comes down to, like, veterans and goaltending, obviously, is like a huge thing. So it's just weird if the Flyers have goaltending, because that never happens. It's like amazing.
First time since Hextall. I mean, they made it to Stanley Cups where it's literally like, they haven't figured out who's going to start in goal tonight. It's like, how is that possible?
It's so funny because how bad the Devils have been, and like they strangely, which is so weird, they can't seem to develop like their draft picks. Like, all their draft picks, you're like, oh yeah, it's a good one, it seems good, and then they just don't develop. It's like, realize how spoiled I was with those teams for 20 years, basically. Like, just like watching a couple Hall of Famers and guys who stayed with the team for 20 years. It's like you don't see it anymore. But like, I'm like, damn, at one point I had Martin Brodeur every day, Scott Niedermeyer every day, Scott Stevens every day, Patrick Elias. Like, you know, it's a little spoiled. We were a little spoiled. That's all I'm saying.
What it all boils down to, I mean, it's happening in Detroit as well. They're hot garbage down there. What it boils down to, you had the correct formula, and it will work all the time. And nothing will specifically happen, but something will kind of tweak. It's like, all right, we went from a great team to a good team. And then the owners are like, well, you got us all these championships. I can't fire you. We're doing all right. So be it. And then it just tweaks down a little bit more, tweaks down a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then by the time you realize, uh-oh, we're in trouble, it's kind of too late because you already invested X amount. And usually these guys, before they go, give 10-year deals to people who shouldn't be on the ice for another 2 years.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And, you know, it's just you have to be crazy to think that team can keep it up for like 15, 20, 25 years. Like you just go through natural decades of good or bad. It's every sport. But I don't know. But I think that's it for today. I had a bit. I'm going to save it for Monday's episode, I think. We will be putting out a twofer episode that was supposed to go out last Thursday. We'll be throwing it up with a couple cool acting guests. One guy from Ford vs. Ferrari. Another guy who's done some stuff for Fear the Walking Dead. So they're both really cool. So we'll throw that up on Thursday. So I want to thank Frank Sims. What a great guest tonight. And that's it. Berlo, anything to promote before we roll on out?
I'm going to promote a friend of ours. She lost her daughter. Her name was Ashley Moore. She was a trans woman. We might be able to kind of have an extended episode to kind of talk about this and talk with our friend Starlet. But right now we're in a state where there's questions of them properly investigating the death. So right now there's a GoFundMe out there. You can search for Investigate Death of Trans Woman Ashley Moore. And they're trying to raise some money to kind of push the issue because the girl was just 26 years old, I believe. There's a lot of evidence to point to some kind of foul play, and it's really weird what's going on, and it's really sad. Starlet's a wonderful human being. It's been hurting my wife for quite a while because they were good friends, and it's an absolute tragedy. Nobody should have to deal with losing a child, let alone somebody doing something to it and looking for closure. So please go to GoFundMe and look up Investigate Death, a Trans Woman, Ashley Moore, and give some money to this. We gave some money, and like I said, I hope to kind of, in a later episode, do a little more exploration onto this, and it's a sad situation, so if you can give, it'd be very helpful.
Yeah. Pretty terrible story. Pretty hard for me to promote something else after that, but please check that out. Pretty awful story. But I guess I will, on a lighter note, I will just promote, he booked me a few times, and Sold Joel. Joel Richardson is a comedy producer, and he does some comedy too, but it's pretty amazing what he's been able to do down in Royersford, Pennsylvania. He just opened this club last year, but now he's had to move outside, obviously, with what's going on. And he's able to build like a beach with like a really nice stage, and they're doing a 17-day comedy festival. It just looks really amazing. I give him a lot of credit for the work he's put in. Just like some of the guys on the festival, they had Joe List, then Shuli, then Victor Benedetto, Sherrod Small, Mark Norman, Jimmy Schubert, Chuck Nice, Luis Gomez, Jessica Kirsten, Keith Robinson. So like some of the biggest names in comedy down there doing it. And he just looks like he does a phenomenal job. So go check out at souljoels.com, J-O-E-L-S. So it's pretty cool to see comedy, you know, finding its way still during all this stuff. So it's not the same, but it'll definitely helps, and it's definitely cool to see. So that's it, guys. Please check us out on iTunes and Stitcher and the BS Podcast Network and the RTF Sports Network, Discovery County Network, Denville Radio. We're on a bunch of different things, but please leave us a review on iTunes. It helps the podcast kind of get into more searches and more like, if you like this, you might like this. And that's where we get some new listeners and whatnot. So that really helps. So other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Oh, yeah.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. 10. Ground control 9, to Major Tom. 8. 7. 6.